para falar sobre o impacto cultural que o futebol brasileiro tem na Austrália e como o esporte é uma forte ferramenta de união e apoio para os brasileiros que chegam aqui. A SBS em Português preparou a minissérie de podcasts chamada Canarinhos FC, um lugar onde todos são bem-vindos. No episódio de hoje, trazemos um dos grandes apoiadores dos Canarinhos e nome estabelecido do futebol na Austrália, Craig Foster. Foster é ex-jogador da seleção australiana, o Socceroos, e construiu uma carreira marcante como comentarista, analista e defensor apaixonado do futebol. Durante muitos anos, esteve à frente da cobertura esportiva da SBS, trabalhando lado a lado com Les Murray no icônico e pioneiro The World Game, ajudando a consolidar o futebol como parte essencial da identidade australiana. Craig hoje é também uma referência no debate sobre direitos humanos, multiculturalismo e justiça social. A entrevista a seguir tem histórias desde o começo do clube. Menção de outro grande jornalista pioneiro na introdução do futebol na Austrália, Les Murray, e lembranças carinhosas do começo do clube. A entrevista foi feita em inglês. Hi, Craig. Welcome to SBS Portuguese.
Yeah, great. It's my pleasure.
You have a long history with the Canarinhos in Sydney. How did that connection begin and what has it meant to you over the years?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I've known the guys, Jill, and everyone down there for many, many years. Well, decades, actually. Probably 20 years, I guess. Fantastic guys. Love them. You know, passionate about football. They've been going so very, very long. Just supporting the game, playing the game, promoting the game, loving the game, and of course bringing their community together as well through the game of football, which of course Brazil is so famously renowned for. I met them many, many years ago through both Les Murray and Johnny Warren, who were both like patrons of the Canarinhos. They both absolutely loved them. They loved what they stood for. They knew the people, you know, because they're a marvelous group of blokes down there who, is such a tight community. And of course, Les and Johnny were huge supporters of Brazilians, of the Brazilian community, and particularly of Brazilian football, that jogo bonito, the mode of playing, the way of thinking about the game. They wanted that to be enhanced here in Australia to be built into our whole football culture. And both of them live their lives in many ways through that kind of prism. You know, they love Brazil. It formed a big part of the way they spoke about football. You know, Les would always talk about futebol, you know,
yes,
or diferente. He would always say diferente.
Jogo bonito, diferente.
Yeah, diferente. I'd never heard it. And we'll be watching a game in 2002. We were watching the World Cup. I was working with Les and Johnny, you know, in the South Korea-Japan World Cup. And we're watching the first game, you know, we did before the game. And then we start to watch the game off air before we come on half time. And someone's doing something and Les is yelling, diferente, diferente, him and Johnny. I was like, what is going on here? So that was the start of my journey to understanding, you know, their way of thinking and how Brazilian football and the Canarinhos had influenced them.
And talking about Les, the Canarinhos created their community tournament, the Les Murray Cup.
Yes.
Why do you think it's important for us to cherish the legacy of Les Murray and everything he did for football in this country?
Yeah, well, it's particularly apt that the Brazilian community and the Canarinhos in particular, you know, continue to recognize him. It's important to have that trophy. It's important to have that day. You know, memories can fade, and it's important that different sections of the Australian community, in this case the football community, but this applies to anyone, you know, who's been an important figure. It's important that these things happen annually. It reminds the new generation. It gets people thinking about it. people are not aware of what Les contributed. They can see it. But I was talking about his language, and how much he was influenced by Brazilian football. For example, you know, Les as nicknames for everyone, and this was generic across SBS football department, everyone was called an Inho. You know, so...
Ah, yes, Inho, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's right. So I was Fozinho. That was... that was my name for Les. He never called me anything else. He never, ever called me Craig. He never, ever called me Foz. Unless it was on air, he used to call me Foz. But as soon as we got off air, it's Fozinho, you know?
Lezinho,
and we had, and then all the friends, you know, we had a Bobinho, and I still call them that today. That's what they called, you know. So all of our friends had, so we'd have barbecues at home here, you know, in Sydney, and Les would come around, all the friends would come around, and unless they were, you know, like Argentinian, you know, many of whom our friends are, so on, you know, you had to be a bit careful, but everyone else was basically an Inho, and anyone who would come in, to the group, Les would immediately just automatically start calling them that. And these nicknames have lasted their whole lives. You know, like 25 years later, this is, you know, if you go through my phone book on my phone, you know, it's very largely Inhos. And, you know, we never even give it a second thought anymore. But that's why the Canarinhos loved him. You know, I tell that story because it gives you a real insight into how much football informed his life. His whole life was football. I know he was on air and he did other stuff. You know, he did Toyota World Sport. It was all about, you know, broad sport. But he didn't give too much of a stuff about most of it. He just would get up in the morning. He would look at football stuff. He'd put his football shirt on, right? You know, he's a Botafogo fan. So when we went to, he was a Gaincha fan. So when we went to the 2014 World Cup, his partner, you know, late in life until the end of his life, a very dear friend of mine, by the name of Cida, of course, that's Cidinha. We call her Cidinha. When we were at the World Cup over there, that was his last World Cup. He was retiring. And so on, I think, the final show or one of the final shows, Cidinha had travelled quite a long way, despite the fact we were in Rio. She had to go and find this Gaincha Botafogo shirt. It was a commemorative shirt.
Garrincha.
Yeah, sorry, my pronunciation is
not
good
enough.
No,
mine is worse in English. Yeah, no, okay.
Garrincha. Okay. Yeah.
Garrincha.
Yeah. What does he call the...
I read his biography, Garrincha. He was crazy.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just a beautiful, beautiful jersey. And I presented to Les on air on his last ever show on SBS. And he was, you know, basically in tears on air. And he talked about Gaincha and, you know, and what that had meant to him. And when he passed away, Cidinha gave that shirt to me. So occasionally, when I go to something with the Brazilian community, I'll always wear that shirt because, you know, it's a lovely memory. So those stories, I think, give you a pretty good insight into why the Brazilian community loved him and Johnny. But, you know, in this context, Les, also why the entire Australian football community loved him, because he was so proud of the game. And in those years, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, even 20 years ago, no one was proud of the game. Right? They loved it, but, you know, Australia wouldn't allow people to be proud of the game. It was the WOG game, it was the WOG ball, it was the immigrant game, it was the game of all divers. You know, it wasn't manly or tough enough. You know, all of this stuff was only 20 years ago. And Les used to sit on air in his suit and just say to Australia, this is a magnificent game. This is the beautiful game. I don't care about any of your other stuff. You know, you're wrong. I come from the Danubian school of, Hungarian and Austrian football in the 50s, and I understand all this stuff. And Australians were just like, who is this dude? Like, what is he talking about? But the football communities, especially, you know, Latin America, they looked at him and said, oh, my God, this guy gets us. He knows who we are. He knows what he's doing. He knows what he's talking about. And they loved him for that. He was a crazy, crazy dude. He's a bit like Maradona, you know, like you don't want to emulate.
Yeah, he's crazy.
Yeah, you don't want to emulate their personal characteristics. But he was. Or their morals or their ethics, that's a different matter. But he was an extraordinary player in the 1962 World Cup. He was the key player for the Brazilian win. And they called him Alegria do Povo.
Yeah, Alegria do Povo. That's correct. Yeah, the happiness of the people.
That's right, joy of the people. So it was a beautiful story, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And looking ahead for the World Cup 2026, we are here this year, and also the power of football. And especially nowadays, Craig, where like we see a world less tolerant, less inclusive.
Yeah.
What role can community clubs like the Canarinhos can play in connecting our migrant communities in Australia and also assisting in settling people in here?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, this has just been so important. I mean, if, you know, Australia didn't have a kind of cultural block for decades and decades against football, and that is because of entrenched interests of other sports, of course, like they could see the potential growth. I mean, when Socceroos went in 1974 with Johnny Warren, they went to their first male World Cup. In fact, the first World Cup for Australian football, female or male. It exploded. You know, Santos came here and played at the Sydney Cricket Ground. I think there were over 60,000 people at least. And there were thousands of people locked outside because Australians wanted to see Pelé, you know, and Santos play. You know, against the Socceroos team. So there was incredible growth in the game, and it was obvious that this was, you know, really a sleeping giant. And so there were really entrenched interests, you know, that worked very hard to put the game down, to attack the game, demonize the game, and so on. And the game fought against that for many years. The reason I mention it is because if that hadn't happened, Australia would have acknowledged decades ago of the immense contribution of football to the integration of new communities in Australia. It's just been unbelievable. It's unprecedented. There's nothing else that has done so. And so almost every community, perhaps you're talking about subcontinent, India, Sri Lanka, no. Perhaps US, maybe not, but even there, the football is, you know, in the last 20 years is obviously immense. The rest of the world, so entire Africa, all of Asia, except the subcontinent, you know, all of Latin America, and all of Europe. You know, all of those communities came, and the primary sporting love that they carried with them in their suitcase was football. And so they all created clubs everywhere. You know, so you go around Australia today, there's decades-old clubs, there's 50, 60-year-old clubs, you know, Uruguayan clubs, Brazilian clubs, you know, like Canarinhos, 54 years, but everything. You know, there's, you know, Croatian clubs and Serb clubs, or the old Yugoslav clubs and Hungarian clubs, and they're everywhere. And so, you know, one day we should quantify what that incredible contribution was, because they had two main institutions. They would start their religious institution, whether they created a church or whatever it was, and then they would create their sporting institution, which was their football club. And they were the two institutions through which the community would gather, discuss, you know, bring outside Australians in, integrate, play against other Australians. It was an unbelievable promotion of integration through football, and you know, no other sport could even possibly think about doing that in a multicultural country like Australia.
The Canarinhos is celebrating 54 years next week, 23rd of February. What is your message to them?
Yeah, happy birthday to the Canarinhos, Gilles, and everyone. You guys done an amazing job. You kept alive the, you know, the concept and the beauty of football and the Brazilian, you know, view of the game and the jogo bonito, and that's been a huge contribution to Australia. You lifted Les and Johnny up as well. That was important. They needed supporters in the community, you know, 40 years ago. You know, they need people to actually be around them, letting them know that they were doing the right thing, that you supported them, and that gave them strength. And they ended up as two of the most famous broadcast and, you know, sporting evangelist Australians in our history. You guys played a big part in that. You also brought forward the Brazilian community, you know, provided an entry point for all Brazilians to come and through their love of futebol to understand the Australian football environment, then the Australian social and community environment, and provided a pathway there. So you've done an amazing job. That's what football does. That's why we're all united through the game. Well done. Congratulations. All my love to all of the Brazilian community in Australia, and happy birthday.
And Craig, this year is the World Cup 2026. Who do you think will win the World Cup?
Oh, that's a tough one because there are some rising stars, you know, with Ancelotti with Brazil. It's difficult to know, you know, what he's going to be able to provide. You know, this is his first time as a national coach. He's never done that before. And so you don't quite know how he's going to go in a tournament, which is, you know, critically important. So that's, I think, some uncertainty, a bit of a question mark there for Argentina. You know, they're still going well in South American qualifying. They did well. Messi's, you know, he's getting old, but he can still turn a game. You know, is it too late for him? What he did in 2022 was already extraordinary. You know, is it possible that he could do so again? I don't think so. And then you've got England, who are rising. You know, they've made finals of Euros, semi-finals of World Cups in recent years, and they have a group that can certainly win. And they've got a coach in Thomas Tuchel who knows tournament play very well. Will at least knock out, you know, club football. So I think he has a very good concept of, you know, what's required to win, you know, one-off cup competition games like the Champions League, for example. So that's, I think, very interesting. And, of course, France are always strong. Germany, always strong. This is going to be, I think, a really, really even. Of course, it's a World Cup with 48. It's bigger than ever before. Mm-hmm. So we don't. That means that the groups will be slightly weaker, which should allow the strong ones to certainly get through very comfortably. They can rest a lot more players than what would be normal. So they should be stronger late in the tournament. So there's a lot of things that are question marks. And a big one of that is who's going to win. I don't think anyone can say there's no really clear standout for that, you know, for that range of reasons.